Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday, Tuesday, casual Tuesday, Wednesday, casual hump day, Thursday, casual Thurs, that's what we call it, and Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, October 30th, 2020. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps and steps and steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, writer from the New Republic, host The Politics of Everything, Alex Perrine will be joining us this casual Friday. Meanwhile, it's not too casual. It's the final weekend before the election. The race dynamics seem to be basically static. It's another record-breaking day, however, for COVID cases. We have reached over 90,000 new cases as of yesterday. Over 1,000 new deaths yesterday, bringing the total to nearly 230,000 deaths in this country. And Trump pretends it's not happening. Meanwhile, a Republican-dominated federal appeals court looks to toss, potentially, thousands of Minnesota ballots. And the stimulus deal, officially dead. Economic relief may not come for months. New report, the Department of Justice quashed an inquiry into the 2014 police killing of 12-year-old Tamir Rice. And Glenn Greenwald quits The Intercept over suggested edits on his Hunter Biden piece. Meanwhile, the Trump administration boots gray wolves from the endangered list. And following Ossoff's roasting, Purdue chickens out of the last Georgian Senate debate. And surprise, Trump's senior prescription drug plan? Sad joke. And folks, Jeremy Corbyn suspended by Labour Party in Britain. And you folks can relax. UPS found Tucker Carlson's top secret package. All this and more on today's program. Excuse me. It is Friday. We are now 4 days away from the, I guess, the beginning of the end of the election. Tuesday will be the last day that you can vote, and the last day in some instances maybe that votes will be counted, depending on what our conservative-dominated federal courts have to say. We will talk more about that as the day goes on. I've got to be honest with you folks. I don't know how you're doing, but I feel like I haven't slept in weeks. And the anxiety is I'm all over the place. The one thing I can tell you, and the only thing that I think that we can really say for sure in terms of the state of the race, is that when you compare where we were in 2016, now people have this sense that the polls were way off, and the national polls were actually quite accurate. And there were some state polls, some states that were under-polled, frankly. But what you can see in the data this time in 2016, and not specifically the 30th, because I think the date of the election was a little bit later, but 4 days out, if you looked back in 2016, you will see a tightening happening. There was a tightening in the race. The trajectory was that Clinton was dropping, Trump was rising. That was what the trajectory was in 2016. That is not the trajectory in 2020. In 2020, the race, and I'm talking specifically in terms of in specific states, seems to be more or less static. Now, the only factor that we can't really assess, I think the pollsters have confidence about it, but I don't have that same level of confidence, but that's because I'm not a math person. But we don't know what the disenfranchisement will bring us. We don't know the implications of ballots not being counted. There has been a concerted effort by the conservatives on the state courts, and particularly the federal courts, and particularly the Supreme Court, to diminish the number of ballots that are going to be counted. To diminish the number, not only, you know, we can see vote suppression in multiple different ways. One is we narrow the number of people who are eligible to vote. That has been an ongoing project by the Republican Party. And now what we're seeing are the courts saying, we are now going to limit the counting of not only eligible voters, but legitimately cast ballots. Doesn't matter if the ballot was filled out before Election Day. Doesn't matter if it was postmarked on or before Election Day. We may limit the number of ballots that actually can be counted, even if they were executed legally. And frankly, except for Florida 2000, I don't know if we've ever had that situation. I don't know if we've ever had a situation in this country where we've had ballots that were legally cast, but will not be counted because the mail screwed up. It's conceivable, based upon the way that they're talking now, that, you know, maybe they'll just run out of time with some of these federal courts. But we will talk more about that. The latest is out of Minnesota. We will get to that. But let us turn now to the closing argument of the president, and backed up by his family, which is on a day, and this happens almost every day now, when this country has crossed a new threshold, a new record for coronavirus cases. Yesterday, it was 90,728 new cases. And we are now seeing, as expected, a lagging rise in hospitalization rates and numbers, and also deaths. So we are now, as of yesterday, was over 1,000 deaths, 1,004 deaths. And we are now, the deaths and the hospitalizations have now caught up. They're lagging indicators. The deaths we're seeing now were from new cases 4 to 5 weeks ago. And that means that these 90,000 cases, these new records that we're seeing now, are going to lead to more deaths down the road. Experts are now starting to warn, according to CNN, that the daily death rates will triple by mid-January. Now, that, of course, is a function of what we do to mitigate the spread of the disease. But Right now, it doesn't look so good. But here is Donald Trump with his final message for the country, which is, you know, don't worry about it.
Riots are having in France. The people are tired. They can't do it anymore. They can't do it anymore. They're losing their businesses. They're losing their jobs. They go back and the business is closed for 9 months. We can't do it anymore. They can't do it. We know the disease. We social distance. We do all of the things that you have to do. If you get close, wear a mask. Always controversial. It's not controversial to me. You get close, you wear a mask.
Pause it for 1 second. I just want to point something out that I think if you're watching this, you can see that is sort of, I don't know, what's the word here? Matt, am I looking for? Is it ironic?
It's like some visual irony, I would say.
And in fact, this is like one of the first clips I've seen in a while where they don't seem to have made an effort to have people behind him wearing masks. Usually they make the people standing behind him or sitting behind him wear masks, so it looks like he's encouraging it. And then you look the camera shots of people around the entire stadium or wherever it is, they're not wearing masks. But in this instance, it appears that 80% of the people standing sitting behind him are not wearing masks. Let's see.
Not controversial to me. You get close, you wear a mask. Social distance. You know the bottom line, though? You're going to get better. If I can get better, anybody can get better. And I got better fast.
Jeez.
They were so happy. They couldn't believe it. That was probably the happiest day that they've had in years. And then I came out of the hospital.
There you go. That was not apparently enough for the Trump campaign. That's the message, though. You're going to get better. You're going to get better. Wear a mask. I mean, but not in this specific instance. Here is Don Jr. that same day, or I should say now evening, on with Laura Ingraham on Fox News. He's very excited. I feel like he gets a lot more energy in the evening. I don't know what that is. But here he is on Laura Ingraham show.
Out all the stops. The virus is attending the rally. The best, apparently they're waving flags too.
These people are truly morons. You know what I mean? And I like how they go after Scott Atlas because he's not an epidemiologist, but Sanjay Gupta now magically is. I mean, give me a break, Laura. The reality is this. If you look, I put it up on my Instagram a couple days ago because I went through the CDC data because I kept hearing about new infections. But I was like, well, why aren't they talking about this? Oh, because the number is almost nothing. Because we've gotten control of this thing. We understand how it works. They have the therapeutics to be able to deal with this. If you look at that, look at my Instagram, it's gone to almost nothing. We're outperforming Europe in a positive way so well because we've gotten a hold of this. But they understand that just...
Well, it's actually going the opposite direction, and apparently he has a graph on his Instagram that is he's misinterpreting what the graph says. It's a I don't know the details of it, but we can just I'll reiterate the numbers that we are breaking new records almost every single day for infections, and we haven't broken new records for deaths, but it's certainly back up from where it was. We had, I think, about 300 or 400 fewer deaths a couple of months ago. And so he's out of his mind.
He was going to punch through the back of that chair. He was completely amped up. Like the way he was sitting, that his demeanor is just psycho. That's not... Got to be cool, man.
He seems to have a lot of energy. I'll tell you, boy, if they could bottle that or, you know, maybe put it in some type of vial that you could take.
Yeah, productivity would soar.
You'd make a lot of money selling that kind of energy.
It is interesting that now it seems like the Trumps really feel like Donald having gotten it and recovering is like the best thing that could have happened for them. Like it's this great boon
well,
for...
Yeah, because it speaks to exactly who they go for is people who don't ultimately get affected by stuff. So they have this example that, hey, you can get this and not really be affected by it. I mean, I'm terrified of the effect it has in North Dakota. Like, I think a whole bunch of old people in North Dakota are being way more flagrant about stuff since Trump recovered.
I'd like to see that chart from when he got it to now and the rise in infection rate.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And it also is a wonderful metaphor as the stimulus talks completely break down, and that's it. And I should say this before, and we will get to Alex Perrine in a moment. I will say this about the stimulus. It is highly unlikely that if Joe Biden wins the election and the Democrats take the Senate, that we're going to see any type of COVID economic relief before February 1st. Maybe we'll see it in that first week, that last week of January. But the Republicans, I think, are going to go immediately into obstruction mode. And for some people, that's all well and good. Trump Jr., he walks around. He's not bothered by the lack of stimulus whatsoever. For millions of people who are facing eviction, who are running out of unemployment, who are thrust back into poverty, it is a much bigger problem. But first, a word from our sponsor. Today's program is sponsored by Sunset Lake CBD.com. I've been hitting the CBD quite a bit. In fact, I know a lot of people who have been telling me that that's basically how they're getting through a lot of these days here. It's a relaxant. And Sunset Lake CBD, they're a farm. They're located outside of Burlington, Vermont. They have amazing farming practices. They practice regenerative farming. They practice integrated pest management. So they're 100% pesticide free. The way that they deal with pests when they're growing their hemp is by basically releasing predators of other pests in their fields. They do this in conjunction with the University of Vermont. They're 100% organic in terms of their in terms of what they feed their hemp. And their products are fantastic. They have just come out with a new Guatemalan dark roast coffee that is infused with CBD. It is organic. It's Rainforest Alliance certified. So check that out. That has been my normal weekend brew. And frankly, now a little bit towards during the week. But they also have a fantastic salve for sore muscles, and I use it for my eczema that has CBD and arnica in it and beeswax. They have tinctures, which I use to go to sleep. They have smokables. Matt, where are you on the smokables these days?
Yeah, actually had a pre-roll left and shared that with somebody the other day. And so I checked those out for folks who aren't, want something to basically an oral fixation, smoke something. It's nice and relaxing.
It's very relaxing. They have gummy bears. So check it out. And they're giving you 20% off with the coupon code left is best. One word, left is best, sunsetlakecbd.com. All right. Do we have, Alex? I want to welcome to the program staff writer at the New Republic, also co-host, of the podcast, The Politics of Everything. Is that right, Alex? Is that what it's called? Oh, look at you. You've shaved.
I did, just for you.
Oh, well, thank you. So is this the first time you've shaved during the pandemic?
No, but it's the first time in a little while.
Well, you look like 15 years younger, I got to say. Makes you look very boyish. It's good to see you.
Good to see you, too.
So, I don't know, Alex. I mean, how are you doing? I started off the show by, you know, telling folks, copping to the fact that, you know, I feel like I haven't slept in weeks, and there just seems to be a tremendous amount of anxiety. We see the polls look good, but we just don't know.
Right.
All the different shenanigans that are going on. You had a piece, I guess it was a week or two ago. Supreme Court justices are politicians too. I think we can extend that to the federal appellate judges as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's been, I should have waited another week or two to write that piece, because it's been, the scope of it has only become clearer since then. You know, I wrote that in response to this explanation of one piece of supposed Supreme Court doctrine that was going to decide how they decided all the election cases. And that's, I think at that point, even that's moot now. And they're just inventing entirely new justifications for like strange decisions about ballot counting and sorting.
There's one actually that just took place in your hometown, in your home state.
Yeah.
And this was a federal appellate court not en banc. It was a three-judge panel, one of whom was appointed by George W. Bush. The other was appointed by Donald Trump. And that judge in particular had the rare distinction of being considered unqualified by the ABA. I mean, that, you know, that happens occasionally, but very, very rarely. And that court, we had Rick Hassin on the other day to talk about why the Supreme Court ruled the way they did in Wisconsin and why they did in Pennsylvania. And this, like you say, took it to another level, where you have a federal court negating not only a state court, but also a state election official on how to run their elections.
Right.
And so we're like, each time the federal courts, and that doctrine was made up whole cloth. There's nothing that the Supreme Court could say that, because they're heading in this way. They really want, it seems, to count as little votes as possible.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a question of how does a federal court, including the Supreme Court, what kind of deference do they give to the states for running their own elections? And who do they give that deference to? And apparently the ends of that are irrelevant. Whose ballots? I mean, we're 3 or 4 days out. I may have mailed if I live in Minnesota, I mailed my ballot yesterday. According to this federal court, it may not count.
May not. Yeah.
No, I got it in 4 days early.
Yeah. Yeah. And by the way, if you are in Minnesota and that is your situation, you can go cast a vote in person and spoil your mailed in ballot if you're worried about it showing up late. But yes, it does seem like the doctrine, whatever justification they use in their opinions when they write opinions, the actual doctrine seems to be here that the people who should be in charge of running state elections is legislatures controlled by Republicans. Like that, basically.
Right.
Period. You know, you can have a Democratic attorney general, you can have Democratic election officials, a Democratic governor, but the courts are now deciding basically, like, if the Republicans have, you know, in Minnesota's, I think, the last divided legislature, but if Republicans have state legislature, like, we're going to let them decide all the rules on in terms of whose ballots are getting counted in November.
Yeah, it's pretty stunning to see it this naked. Right.
Yeah,
and
it is.
And on one hand, it hopefully will provide the inspiration for Democrats in the Senate to engage in some type of court reform. I mean, what's really coming out of this whole story is just we have multiple now institutions. Look, the Senate has always been fairly undemocratic. I mean, it was, you know, in the history of the country, I'm not going to say it's not a recent phenomenon, but it's not, for most of the history of the country, we did not have a Senate that was even elected by voters.
Right.
And but it still is wildly undemocratic. And now we're just seeing I don't know. I guess it's weird. For a long time, I was always a little bit allergic to talk about the threats to democracy in this country, because it seemed like hyperbole. But
yeah.
We're really, I mean, if it's on a sliding scale, we're really sliding down that scale, as it were.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. And you know, I think there still is a reluctance to be clear-eyed about the like the current state of American democracy and what it threatens to become, because it you know, especially for people who came of age at a time of great stability, not necessarily a time of like strong democracy, but a time of great stability in terms of these institutions. Like, I think it's hard for them to be real about what the courts have become, right? Or just how broken the Senate is. And, you know, I think a lot of our sort of historical comparisons don't map well, because people are always saying like, well, look, you know, the joke is like, it's, you know, it's illegal for the president to make himself a dictator or something like that. But like, it's not going to look like Nazi Germany in, you know, overnight. What it's going to look more like is the sort of degraded, like fake democracy we had the last time or before we actually sort of expanded suffrage and made our institutions more representative. You know, it's going to look a lot more like the sort of era of the Lochner Court and the Gilded Age than it will like, you know, 20th century fascism looks to, I think.
I mean, my sense is too that what we had, I mean, I don't know if this is true necessarily of the Supreme Court, although I think certainly in the Lochner era, you could argue that it was. But it feels like to a certain extent, we had the construct of democratic institutions, but we had not fulfilled, we almost had not filled those edifices up in some way, right? Like where the voting worked, but the problem was we were limiting who could vote.
Yeah.
Essentially. And yeah. I mean, we're still doing that, but institute, you know, the thrust of it was to exclude large swaths of people. And obviously we did this from an economic standpoint. And now it feels like once some of those barriers were weakened in some ways, the idea was like, okay, well, you've weakened the barriers as to who has entry into these buildings. But so what we're going to do is we're going to destroy the buildings.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And I mean, that's, you know, I think that's part of the Trump promise and the current Republican promise is like, we'll blow this thing up rather than let it become an actual multiracial democracy. Like we'll steer the ship into the iceberg purposefully instead of letting them take the helm. And I, you know, I think it's like that's sort of one of the implicit promises of that movement, right? It's like, we would rather break this thing than let everyone share it.
Right. I just want to just like look a little bit forward to, in the event that Donald Trump loses, right? I mean, I keep vacillating back and forth about how much I should sort of embrace the numbers. And you hear some of the pollsters saying like, this could be a huge blowout. And it could. And it's also sort of, it's also, I think, problematic in and of itself that it would need to be.
Right.
As opposed to just like being a close election, because I think there is a general feeling that if this is close, there is enough of an apparatus already set up by the Republicans to diminish it. I mean, to undercut it. But let's talk a little bit about what we anticipate happening if Trump does lose in terms of like what's happening with Republicans. I mean, there was a piece I had yesterday, and I can't find it at the moment, about I think it's a guy's name, Potter, who was formerly a member of the Federal Election Commission, who's now working for a Protect the Vote organization. And he said, there was a quote in there that I just found stunning, where this guy had said something to the effect of like, I just can't believe that there's a Republican who's trying to diminish the number of people voting. And I was just like, what?
Right.
We have tape of Paul Weyrich in 1980. Mm-hmm. There's video. I mean, people can Google this, where he is addressing a Christian organization, some type of big conference. And he chastises them for being goo goo about government.
mm-hmm.
saying that we don't want there to be a lot of voters, that we have more leverage when there's fewer people who vote.
Yeah.
And this isn't, Weyrich is not some type of outlier. Co-founded the Heritage Foundation, co-founded the American Legislative Executive Council. I mean, these are two pillars of the conservative corporate movement in this country. He coined the phrase moral majority, which dominated our politics and sort of, you know, it is mutated, but it is more or less like, you know, the next, or I should say the antecedent to, you know, the Tea Party, even on some level. This has been a Republican staple for a long time. You know, the problem is the Republican Party.
Right.
Donald Trump just happens to be the mouthpiece for it.
He's the current avatar of it. Right.
Exactly. Well, how successful do you think they're going to be if Donald Trump loses in sort of rewriting this narrative? Like, how long is it going to take them to be like, Donald Trump was, you know, it wasn't so much the policies, it was Donald Trump was a horrible person.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. It's going to depend a lot on how much help they get both from the mainstream press and from the Democratic Party, I think. And to be very pessimistic, it's you can go back to 2009 and just how quickly George W. Bush just literally disappeared from everyone's mouths and then eventually from their consciousness until he, you know, came back as a beloved painter.
Right. Barack Obama was very adamant about turn the page. We did turn the page, except for the problem is that the book is still there and sometimes these things come back to haunt you.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't know. I think that on the one hand, a lot of people have been very radicalized by this presidency on the sort of soft liberal and left side. A lot of people got very radicalized by this. And you hope that that doesn't go away the day Biden is president-elect. And you hope that what that means is that they force the Democrats who rely on them for their support, they sort of force them to actually treat the Republicans as a dangerous opponent and not, you know, the people who can be reasoned with now that the bad man has gone away.
Right.
And, you know, a lot is going to, it's going to be a little different from George W. Bush too, obviously, because Trump, the person, is not going to disappear to Texas. You know, he's going to be holding rallies, you know, probably for the rest of his life just because he enjoys it.
He's going to be like Sarah Palin was.
Yeah. Right?
I mean, totally, people forget that when Sarah Palin lost, she was still on the scene as a political figure for a couple of years,
right?
Touring around at these places. And Donald Trump is going to do that, times, I don't know, 5 or 10, right? In terms of like his presence. And he's probably going to have some type of media organization. And he's basically going to dare the Democrats and I think the Washington bureaucracy. And maybe not just the Washington bureaucracy, but maybe also like, you know, some state attorney generals to come after him.
Yeah. I think so. I mean, it is like, I keep, you know, the Time story about Trump and Turkey and how he was saying like, you know, they couldn't quite, you know, no one could figure out why Trump is telling him to lay off this investigation, but like, you just got
to
feel like,
to be clear, let me just fill people in on what the story was.
Yeah. It was, there was a criminal investigation into a Turkish bank that was violating the Iranian sanctions. And when the U.S. attorney in charge of it, Bill Barr, kept telling him to lay off and they wanted to basically end the case with a slight admission of wrongdoing, but no punishment for any individuals or the bank itself. And it was clear that it was happening, like directed by Barr acting on behalf of Trump, who had some sort of crooked arrangement with the Turkish government. We say this like monthly, should have been a blockbuster story in a normal era. But it's one of those things where I do wonder if I think journalists have been working as hard as they can to uncover these things. But I do think like the fact that Democratic leadership in Congress decided this year after impeachment that they were just going to lay off oversight entirely because they thought it was a political loser. Like that will determine, I think, what the future of these of this looks like, because what haven't we learned yet, and how will we ever learn it? You know,
like had laid off oversight before impeachment too. Largely,
yeah, they were forced in. I mean, they were effectively forced into doing impeachment as narrowly as possible. That's what I wonder about. Like, is Trump going to be in legal trouble or like, are there going to be consequences for what happened during this presidency? Is like, this has been the time to have been investigating and uncovering the wrongdoing. And outside of a few particularly good journalistic outlets, you know, no one has been putting in that work.
This is one of the themes that I've been, and I think we've probably talked about it too in the past, harping on for an extended period of time, because the Democrats have failed to show the American over and over again. Impeachment was one of the few opportunities. And Nancy Pelosi was forced into doing it by a lot of even those frontline Democrats that she supposedly was protecting. They came out publicly and said, we want this because there needs to be some accounting. Even those frontline Democrats who are supposedly politically more moderate and ideologically not necessarily aligned with the left of the party, and I think that's true from an ideological standpoint. They tend to be younger though, and they also tend to be more partisan. And they seem to understand that there's an expectation that they will. I'm looking at this even in the most crass, I think, sort of like cynical terms. There's an expectation that their constituents want them to be opponents of the of the Republicans.
Yes.
And one thing is clear from impeachment, you know, you don't even have to follow impeachment. When the Democrats say we're impeaching Donald Trump over this, they are showing, not telling.
Yeah,
that there's something wrong. Yes. And when, you know, Nancy Pelosi can send a letter or Chuck Schumer can send a letter, but you need to do something that I could watch and with the volume off on the TV and know that something was wrong. You know, like they shouldn't have gone in for the hearing for Amy Coney Barrett.
Right.
They should have showed that it was a sham, not get in there, participate in the sham and say, this is a sham until Dianne Feinstein says it was a sham, but it was also one of the best shams I've ever been to.
I'm so glad you organized such a wonderful sham.
Right.
Well, and the other thing, like the other crazy lesson of impeachment that everyone's forgotten is how many people working in the administration, various capacities, came out of the woodwork, which has been something that no one has been willing to do until they leave the administration and then write a book. That was like the time when it actually showed there was an appetite within this administration among lower level people to actually, they were wishing for an outlet to show what they have been witnessing.
Yep.
And I don't know. It's wild that the idea that uncovering wrongdoing by the administration is a political loser, you know, it is
bizarre. And I will say, I think the media has done a pretty good job, but the problem is that they can only sort of like uncover these things.
Yeah.
They can't really make it a story on their own. Although, you know, they certainly have, but in the past, but to the extent that they have, you know, I'm thinking like the emails in 2016.
Well, yeah, exactly.
They are able to do it because they can the Republicans give them the scaffolding.
Yes.
For stuff like that. You know, Benghazi, it's fake, this and that, but they just built the edifice, and then the media can sort of operate on top of that. If the Democrats don't react, the media is built in such a way that it cannot it can't echo these things.
It cannot. So the New York Times can put a big investigation Trump's taxes, for example. It got a lot of mileage out of that. It put it on the front page a couple times. The New York Times cannot continually put Trump's taxes on the front page every day unless someone is making it continually news. You know, they uncovered what there is to uncover, and then they had to move on because there wasn't an official. There was no official saying, waving them around saying, this warrants an investigation. Here's what's scandalous about it.
That brings us to the media. We can talk a little bit about that. And well, let me just one more note. You know, we have a clip of Marsha Blackburn, senator from Tennessee, is she, right? She was on a committee hearing with, I think it was the head of ABC, of Alphabet, I should say, Google, essentially. Mm. And she was talking about, there was an employee there who had said something critical of her. And she started by saying, hey, is that person still there? Have you fired that person yet? As if this was like a normal behavior of an elected official to threaten someone from a company about an individual.
Yes.
No, this is not like you're involved in predatory behavior. You're involved in monopolistic behavior. We're going to take you down. No, it's like you've got an employee there that I have an issue with.
I have a personal issue.
I have a personal issue with. And that is, you know, when you allow Trump to get away with this stuff.
Yeah.
That's the danger, is right? It starts to get like that's what normalization is.
Right.
Normalization is not like, okay, Trump did this again. It is that it is adopted as a modality by our political class, and all of society doesn't just fail to hold him account, but it ends up failing to hold everybody to account to these standards.
Right. The threat of normalization is not that everyone's going to start speaking in incoherent run-on sentences at rallies where old people collapse from heat exhaustion. It's like not like now that Trump. Right. It's that people are going to behave with complete impunity, believing they will never be held to account for anything they do.
Exactly, that's what's happening. I mean, that story came and went, and that's it. Boom. All right, let's talk a little bit more about media. The big story in media news the past 24 hours is Glenn Greenwald has resigned from The Intercept, the media outlet that he co-founded with Jeremy Scahill and Laura Poitras. 4 or 5 years ago now, maybe 6 years.
6 years ago, I think.
Yeah. And it was ostensibly over a piece that he wrote that was ostensibly, well, that's the thing. I found the piece also, like his editors, a little bit disjointed. ostensibly, it's about the suppression or the suppression of the an email or two, frankly, of Hunter Biden's. The big one was that he was getting an email from a Ukrainian official who supposedly met, implying that that official had met with Joe Biden. Mm. I guess when he was not vice president anymore, it was after the fact, I believe. And that element and that in one email exchange, Hunter Biden with some of his partners said, you got to put aside 10% for the big guy. And ostensibly that was Joe Biden. Based upon Hunter Biden, my speculation is that we got to put aside another 10% that he's going to pocket himself, frankly.
I think that's, but yes.
but nevertheless, even if we stipulate that, these emails don't really in any way beyond that implicate Joe Biden. And in fact, in the story that he wrote, Greenwald said, there's no evidence that any of this implicates Joe Biden.
Yeah.
And so the story was sort of about how it was being suppressed, but sort of about like, sort of trafficking these innuendo really is what it was.
Yeah.
And I saw Glenn Greenwald released the emails between him and his editor.
Yeah.
And I have to say, like, I thought the edits were pretty legit.
Yeah.
No, what's your take on this?
I mean, I should disclose, I have worked with a known Glenn for a long time, although we have not spoken recently.
I have also known Glenn for a long, long time.
And I like Glenn as a person, as a human being. I like him a great deal. I think that I think he's lost the plot to some degree, and I think that it's because of he has frequently mistakes his personal animosity for certain people with a belief that they must therefore be corrupt, and that logic has driven him to some places that I find strange this year. And I think he's also motivated by the fact that he genuinely believes the foreign policy establishment represented by the Democratic Party, represented by Joe Biden, is a danger and a threat. That motivates a lot of his behavior as well. He thinks that the foreign policy establishment is a threat to the globe, and possibly even a threat to his own freedom, because he thinks, you know, because of his national security and his work with classified material, he thinks that he might be targeted. But, you know, I also know his editor, Peter Moss, and I recommend go to Glenn's Substack, read the emails between him and his editor, Peter Moss, a very, very thoughtful and conscientious editor and a great journalist. If you are involved in, I almost wanted to write this today, but we had Jacob Silverman wrote a much better piece than I would have on short notice. That's on newrepublic.com. But if you are involved in opinion writing, opinion journalism, or you are an opinion editor, Peter Moss's memo to Glenn on how to fix his story is like a masterclass in how both to try to deal with a challenging writer and in how to try to make an argument as solid as it can be. And you know, I will play devil's advocate very slightly here, because having worked with Glenn in the past, he is correct that his contract stipulated that if he didn't want to be edited, he didn't have to be edited.
Right.
He had that at Salon as well. And I think, like, based on how big this blow up gets, I wonder from the perspective of his editors and at The Intercept, they were sort of getting tired of dealing with him as he went further down this Hunter Biden sort of rabbit hole. But I do wonder if it wouldn't have been in the best interest of the organization to just sort of let him have this instead of turning it into a thing where he becomes a martyr over this ridiculous story.
Yeah. I mean, I get the sense that there was like a lot of things building up on both sides.
I sort of think so
that
too, yeah.
This became, you know, I think for Glenn, it became the sort of opportune time to, pull the ripcord, I guess, as it was.
Yeah.
I agree with you. I mean, the piece would have been written, and it was muddled enough and, sort of not terribly different than other stuff that we've heard. I mean, it's, you know, on some level, it is the parallel to Tucker Carlson saying, we have all of these documents. We digitized them. We put them on a thumb drive. We sent them to UPS, and then they didn't make it.
It disappeared.
And then people had responded to him, like, I guess reporters said, like, but don't you have copies? He's like, we do have copies. Yes. But the point is, someone's reading my texts. And it's sort of like, wait a second. Now it's you highlight the first order thing, like that someone's stolen the documents, but it's really the second order thing that you're talking about, supposedly, that someone's reading your texts.
Right.
And then, like, wait a second, so what you're suggesting is that someone wanted to prevent you from getting the hard copies of stuff that you had surely already had copies of, or people wanted to know what was in those documents that are so explosive. Why aren't they being released if they're so explosive? Like, there's a second order quality to all of this.
Yeah.
That, like you say, I think loses the thread, because it becomes more, I think, about the individuals that there is a certain amount of, like, and this is, you know, this is the era, right? I mean, Donald Trump talks about the coronavirus in relation to, like, it's not fair to him.
Right.
And like there's a lot of that going on these days across the board, where there's this perception that these stories are people conflate. And I think this is, you know, I think this is, there's there, a part of this is like a, you know, the we're you know, Glenn's best work, it seems to me, has been in sort of, you know, aside from the Snowden stuff, which I think is very important stuff, has been in calling out sort of a dual track of justice and rules for people in this country.
Right.
But the plot gets a little bit lost when he thinks he's on the wrong side of that.
Yeah.
Right. Like, I mean, the whole point is that, I mean, he has power. Yeah. And you know, I like, you know, he justifies going on Tucker Carlson show, who, and Tucker Carlson is incredibly disingenuous. He is a, he lies on his show. He simply does.
Yeah.
And I also know just from the past that he has, that he has, you know, played a role on TV, you know, during the Iraq War. I know that he feigned concerned about the Iraq War when he was saying off camera he didn't. I mean, that is, and that is, used to be the type of person that Glenn Greenwald would go after.
Right.
And, but, and skewer. You know, and
he's taking enemy of my enemy just too far. I mean, it really just comes down to that. It's, and, you know, I think it's, I mean, it's disappointing. But, yeah.
I mean, I think it's a loss for, you know, for what he represented in terms of a voice in the media, in my estimation.
Yeah.
Which was someone who was, able to critique because of his independence. And in some respects, he got, it became too personal with him. Like, I mean, I think, like, you know, he got booted from what I understand, you know, from, you know, his regular haunting ground on MSNBC at one point. I'm not sure exactly what the context was. But, you know, people get disinvited all the time. I mean, it happens. And it's, yeah, I mean, that stinks. But it's also like, that is not, that's not the end game.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's just a... it's not the end grade. It should not necessarily motivate stuff that is principled, it seems to me. And I say this as someone who, you know, I got fired from them too at one point. you know, and I think it was, I had a critique, but it was a broader critique of not just MSNBC. It was like, you know, a problem that we were facing as a society in trying to assess the reality of things. Let's take a quick break for a moment, and we'll come back and wrap this up a little bit, because I would like to get your response on Tucker's apology, or I should say non-apology, for finding his package. Hold on for one sec. We'll take a quick break. So we had teased this. Let's play this clip, because I think this is indicative of really a failure on the right to deal with the moment in many respects, right? Like, this is all about supposedly blockbuster stuff about Hunter Biden that is supposedly implicates Joe Biden because it's his son. And there's no doubt. I mean, I think, like, it's been quite clear for an extended period of time, Hunter Biden traded on his dad's name.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
But you and I could fill up an hour with people from all walks of life, including politics.
Yeah.
Democrat and obviously Republican, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
The last Republican president, his last name was Bush.
Yes.
He was not our first Bush president, right?
Yeah.
And he's not exactly, you know, but for a couple of lucky breaks, you know, he goes the way of Hunter Biden, right?
Yeah.
I mean, George W. Bush. And so, you know, this is not an uncommon thing, but the right seems to have run out of everything. So it's all second order stuff.
Right.
So instead of talking about this blockbuster material, you had Tucker Carlson talking about how he tried to mail the Blockbuster material and the package disappeared. And then, of course, the second night, he had to come out and say, well, the company I didn't name, UPS, said we found it. So here he is. But there's still a mystery. Play this clip.
The main question we had never changed. How did our flash drive get separated from the package that we sent it in? That seemed like something worth knowing. The envelope was securely sealed. We know that. Two witnesses saw our producer seal it, and UPS does not dispute that. Was the package torn open accidentally by a machine? That seems unlikely. UPS says that almost never happens. So we're left with the obvious explanation. Someone, for some reason, opened our package and removed a flash drive containing documents that were damaging to the Biden family. We'd love to know who would do that and why. It would be helpful to see the envelope itself, but UPS says we can't see it because they threw it away. So here we are. We got our flash drive back today, and that's great. What we'd really like are some answers. And speaking of answers, it occurs as reading this that we mentioned the documents that we get from a lot of people. And we've received an awful lot of documents recently about Hunter Biden. We haven't aired all of them. In fact, many we have not aired. The ones that are pertinent to his business career abroad, favors he did on behalf of foreign clients with the help of his father, that seems relevant. And it seems like news. And we brought it to you, and we're not ashamed of that. But there are a lot of documents about Hunter Biden's personal life that we haven't brought to you, and we're not going to. And we should tell you why. One is the obvious answer. He's not running for president. And so to the extent those documents pertain to his dad, of course.
I could say that he's a horrible person, but I'm not going to say that.
A fallen man at this point. And I should also say that I knew Hunter Biden fairly well. We lived near each other in Washington for quite some time. I knew his wife, who was an absolutely outstanding person, a good person. I never thought Hunter Biden was a bad person. I thought he had demons.
Okay, but we don't need to hear this. This filler of
that's
like I'm not going to talk about what a horrible person he is.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we got some real juicy stuff that I'm not going to share with you because it's not pertinent. But you should know.
So wait a second. So they got their thumb drive back. Like, where is the juicy stuff that was promised? Like,
I thought. Yeah,
but I mean. Alex, can you imagine, like, how many times have you gotten a package or an envelope over the course of your life where it's like, hey, it's ripped, or it's, the seal is broken, or the tape on this package is ripped. And then can you imagine going on in front of millions of people
millions,
with a furrowed brow, like, how did this happen? No, the only obvious explanation is that someone's intercepting my texts and that there's Democratic plants in UPS who are getting the message and can isolate the package and that are taking the thumb drive and they're making a copy of it and then putting it back in the bag. But the bag was so ripped because these people are so bad at it that they didn't why would you tip it off to Tucker that you've intercepted it? What kind of spies are these?
That's the combination of the mundanity of that script and his delivery was incredible comedy. I'm just like the anchorman, the serious anchorman tones as he's like describing like what happened, when I lost a book I ordered from bookshop.com, you know. Well, the tracking number says it's been received but not accepted at the post office.
Interesting. Now, well, the only explanation is that someone is aware of what I'm reading and is trying to prevent me from reading it.
Someone's trying to prevent me from reading Martin Heinrich's Introduction to Marx's Capital for some reason.
It really is. We are in a very, very weird place. Alex Perrine, I really appreciate you joining us today to walk us through it. Yeah. I think we'll see you on Tuesday. We celebrate the 10-year anniversary of the show. And in addition, there's also a little election.
There's some other thing going on that day, too.
Exactly. All right, folks, that's our time for today. We'll see you on Monday. And for those of you who are hanging around, Alex, again, thank you. We just we do the first hour replays on the Peacock app. And so then we say goodbye to those folks. And but we will see you on Tuesday. And I don't know. Hopefully there'll be another installment of Tucker's saga.
Yeah, I want to know where this is going. So hopefully by Tuesday there's more.
You know, before I say goodbye, I just wanted to bring this up because I know you obviously you work at the New Republic. There's a lot of investigative reporters there. Okay, I always put the cap back on my toothpaste. Yet the other day I came in and the cap was gone. Now, I ultimately looked around the floor in my bathroom and found it there. But I always put it on. It almost never happens that I would drop the toothpaste cap and then not pick it up right away.
What you're looking for is not a toothpaste cap. What you're looking for is answers.
That's all that I'm concerned about. I just am concerned about it because I don't want the toothpaste to dry out next time.
Mm-hmm.
But if you could get on that, that would be great.
Yeah, I will. We'll assign someone right away.
All right. Thank you, Alex, for joining us. I appreciate it. Bye-bye. Folks, we're going to head into the fun half of the program today. Got a lot of, we wanted to take some calls. And so we're going to take some calls in the fun half today. Just a reminder, this program relies on your support. You can become a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. When you do, you not only support the free show, but you also get extra content every day. Just some house cleaning on Tuesday. We're going to do the show from 12 to 1. And then we're going to do the show from 1 to 12. We're going to wind it back that way, except for we're going to do it from 1 p.m. to 12 a.m. So on Monday, it will be a 12-hour webcasting day for us. We will be joined by Emma Vigeland for the first time as a new member of the show. And I'm setting up the studio in such a way that we can get in there and both maintain some social distance, also with a huge plastic barrier. So I don't know why you don't see more of like people using clear shower curtains, but that's what I'm going for. Actually, it's like I've got the clear shower curtain, but I'm thinking I'm going to probably fix it up with just a clear sheet. And we have air filters in there that will be drawing air, and we'll have humidifiers in there that will be heavying the air. There may be a slight hum over the course of the day, but we're going to be on for 12 hours. We've got all sorts of guests, of some of your Majority Report faves, and folks who have been involved in the show since the beginning. And so it will be both fun and incredibly anxious. If we are fortunate, we will know by the end of the day whether Donald Trump has won re-election. My guess is we won't. So I'll come back on Wednesday. I'll be completely exhausted. And that's just the way it's going to go. But we had a different plan, and then the pandemic hit, and then what are you going to do? So don't forget, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. I think I'm going to be vacillating between drinking Just Coffee and the CBD-infused coffee, and then roll in the alcohol. It's just a question of when I start drinking the alcohol. I don't know when that's going to be. I don't want to start too early. Will there be crying if Trump wins, says Mo on the IM. I don't think they'll be crying, but I'll be pretty bummed. I'll be pretty bummed. Justcoffee.coop and use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. Also, AM Quickie. Sign up for that bad boy at amquickie.com or just search for it on your podcast server or pick up the Majority app. It's all free, majorityapp.com. Don't forget, tune in to Nomi's show today. It is, who does she have on today? I knew it before, and then we had a power situation. So, it is, it's going to be Titha, Bhattacharya. Right, Jamie? That's you introduced us to her.
Hell yeah. She's amazing. I bet they're going to talk about social reproduction theory.
I think it is maybe social reproduction theory or feminism for the 99%. Maybe that's what that is as well. Another way of saying that. You can check that out at 3 p.m. today at youtube.com/thenomakeyshow. Jamie, what's happening on the Antifada?
This week on the Antifada, we have not one, but two very frightening Halloween episodes. On the first one, I speak with Leslie Lee III from Struggle Session and Heather Fortune, formerly of the band Wax Idols, about two very different horror movies. Host, a very topical, very scary movie from the COVID era, and Society, a cult classic, which is says mean true things about the rich. And then today, for our patrons, Andy has an episode with the Lit Crit guy where they talk about Beetlejuice. Also, I'm very excited about next week. We're having on the Angry Workers from the Angry Workers blog to talk about their book. And we're going to talk a lot about the possibilities for revolution and the nitty gritty of that. So might be topical next week. I don't know. Patreon.com/TheAntifada.
Folks, also, before Matt tells us about TMBS, stick around because I got one clip I wanted to play on today because it is when we would normally do Ken, Ken, and Ken. And so, but stick around. I want to do it in the first half of the show so that our free listeners could check it out too. But Matt, tell us what's happened on TMBS this week.
Yeah, actually tonight, Daniel Finn talked with David Griscom just now, and we're going to upload it on Jeremy Corbyn's suspension from labor. Finn has a piece called "The Labor Anti-Semitism Report Has Always Been a Politically Motivated Travesty," so he'll be making that case to David Griscom, and we're putting that up tonight. I think it would have been our Sunday show, but it's pretty topical, so yeah, look forward to that. And the Michael Brooks Show YouTube channel and patreon.com/TMBS.
All right, so, you know, I haven't really given too much thought about long-term what we're going to do about the Ken, Kenny, Ken show. For those people who are relatively new to the program, Michael and I, years ago, Michael Brooks and I used to talk about how easy it would be to do a conservative talk show. And as a way of basically taking a day off, I mean, that was really more or less what we were thinking. Like, we could do that. It'll be just, we decided to do it for April Fools, I think we started. Or maybe it was Halloween. I can't remember. But it was, we had so much fun doing it, and it was so easy. Like, it was just the idea of, like, and this is when, you know, there was just three of us on the show. Matt, old Matt, and Michael, and I. And so, it, you know, the show would get even more exhausting than it is now. And we were like, oh, we don't have to do any research. We just pick up a couple of, that's it. We just, and it'll be fun. And so we would do a conservative talk show from Massachusetts that was loosely based on a bunch of different conservative talk shows. And Michael was from Massachusetts. I'm from Massachusetts. We would do Massachusetts accents. And you can find, if you search on YouTube, you can find the Ken, Ken, and Ken show. We did it over the course of, I think, probably 6 years, 7 years. And it's hard for me to imagine doing that show again with Michael having passed away. But I don't know. I haven't really thought about it long term, but certainly wasn't going to do it today. But in its place, I want to play a clip from a guy from Massachusetts who could very well have been like the third Ken on the Ken, Ken, and Ken show. It's actually a clip from that group of Republicans against Trump, or what is the name of that group? It's Republican Voters Against Trump. So not like the professional Republican class of political, not the professional right, but just a guy who was a Republican who voted for Trump in 2016. And now is not, the language is not safe for work, but I think you'll enjoy it. And I know Michael would have appreciated this guy. And so in lieu of Ken, Ken, and Ken, we give you Jeffrey from Mass.
Hi, my name is Jeffrey Farmer. I'm from Mendon, Massachusetts. And I don't even know why I'm doing this stupid thing, because this is not what I do. I don't do social media or anything. But I cannot fucking, I can't take this anymore. This guy, he's like a Tasmanian devil. He freaking, he just throws bombs everywhere. People can't even keep up with the stuff that he's saying now. And putting my children at friggin' risk going to school, the teachers putting them at risk. I want them to go to school. I want the economy to be great and everything. We all want that. I'm sick. I have an immunodeficiency. I have multiple autoimmune diseases. And I've been doing everything right. We're all supposed to be doing right. This guy couldn't lead frickin' his way out of a frickin' wet paper bag. I'm voting for Joe Biden. Reason I voted for Trump last time was because I could not stand Hillary Clinton. You know, I mean, I don't get it. I don't understand. But if this guy, another 4 years, I can't do it. I can't do any more time with this guy. I feel like I'm in friggin' prison. It's brutal. And I've never been this way about any president. This guy should get the frick off Twitter. All he does is watch the goddamn news. Why don't you do your frickin' job, Donald Trump? Instead of frickin' whining and complaining about everything. Everyone's out to get you. You know what, dude? Frickin', walk a mile in my shoes, and then you could frickin' maybe have the right to frickin' bitch about something. Dude, you are a goddamn sorry excuse for a frickin' human being. Please, if you do not become president. Again, if we vote this guy back in again, I'm done. I can't do it anymore. Well, one more message for you, Trump. Shut the fuck up for once. For once. Why don't you admit you're fucking wrong for once? And why don't you fucking show some kind of fucking empathy towards somebody other than yourself? Good night, Donald.
I like how the dude's like, look, I'm going to say frickin' throughout this whole thing. And then at the end, forget it. All right. I can't deal with it anymore.
Yeah. He bookends it with F-bombs. Nice.
I put up a frickin' for about a minute and a half. And now I'm just going to go with full F-bombs on this dude. Cause he is the fucking worst.
He showed an impressive amount of restraint.
Yeah. I think the New York Times should give that guy a really long profile, honestly, with the sort of people that they've been profiling. I think that seems actually pretty representative. I think that's a pretty representative feeling in this country, actually. And I want to hear more about it.
Yeah, exactly. How about going into that guy's diner and figuring out what he's going to eat and then ask him about it?
You lose Jeff from Mass. It's pretty much over.
Yeah, now, Massachusetts is not going for Trump anyways, but he's probably indicative. There's no reason why he wouldn't be. But
no one likes a freaking whiner.
Nobody likes a whiner, that's for sure. That's for shit sure. All right, folks. See you in the fun half. 646-257-3920. I will call into the system right now.
RM for it.
All right, folks. 646-257-3920. See you in the fun half.
Who sent us this?
Anarchy. Alpha males are back. Back, 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 back. Boy is back. And the alpha males are back, back.
Just as delicious as you can imagine.
The alpha males are back, 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 back. Boy is back. And the alpha males are back, 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 back.
Just want to degrade the white man.
Alpha males are back, back.
I take all of it in my throat.
Alpha males are back.
Almost says what?
The alpha males are back, 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 back.
You are a madman!
And the alpha males are back, back, back.
I am a total cunt.
Can we bring back DJ the Anarchy song, please?
Yeah, or a couple of them. Just put them in rotation.
DJ Danner.
Well, the problem with those is they're like 45 seconds long, so I don't know if they're enough of a break.
That's fucking nonsense.
Hey, fuck reminder.
I do not have Parkinson's.
And the alpha males are
psych.
Fuck them. Fuck them.
Almost has what?
What
all lives matter.
Have you tried doing an impression on a college campus?
I think that there's no reason why reasonable people across the divide can't all agree with this. Psych.
And the alpha males are back, 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 back. And the Africans are black, 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 black. African. And the alpha males are back, 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 back. And the Africans are black. Black.
See Donald Trump out there? Doesn't a little part of you think that America deserves to be taken over by jihadists? Keep it at 100. Can't knock the hustle.
Come on!
Fuck them.
Fuck them.
Fuck them. Things I do for the bigger game plan.
By the way, it's my birthday!
My birthday!
Happy birthday to me, Jew boy!
I have a thought experiment for you.
And the alpha males are back. Back. Africans are black. Black. Alpha males are back. Black, black.
Come on!
Black, come on!
Black, come on!
Someone needs to pay the price of blasphemy around here.
I am a total
pussy, 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 pussy.